to minute 155 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, joining me to finish off this week is Howard Kasner, blogger, screenwriter, and script consultant, and the host of the Pop Art Podcast. Welcome back, Howard.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun all week talking with you about The Great Escape, and we'll see what else we can discuss today as we try to finish off this week. So, minute 155 begins with the waiter delivering the order to the German officers and ends with the waiter checking if the coast is clear. As we were discussing yesterday, Sedgwick is located in a little French cafe in the German city of Fusen.
And right off the Spanish border, of course.
Exactly. And he's suspiciously looking at the fact that there are three German officers sitting at the table near him waiting for their order. And the waiter hears the phone ring, answers the phone, says oui, and then puts the phone down and walks over to give these German officers their order. The three Pornos, what was they called?
Pernods. Not sure. Pernod.
Exactly. Three drinks. Apparently, these officers show up here quite often to get their drinks in the mid-morning, early afternoon, early morning. Who knows what time of day this actually is. There are no clocks, for obvious reasons, because as I'm sure you know as a screenwriter, you could probably explain to us better why it's best not to have clocks in most places.
Well, it's for editing purposes. I mean, the clock keeps moving their hands. No matter what. And sometimes you will see movies where people point out clocks that don't quite match.
Right. So probably the best thing is when you're filming a scene with a clock, you just take the battery out and then it just doesn't move. And as long as it's not a very long scene, you're probably in better shape from that perspective. The waiter, who I was trying to find out who played this waiter, and he's completely uncredited. I wasn't able to figure it out. You mentioned yesterday how you really enjoyed his performance here. So unfortunately, like we were discussing the German soldier earlier this week, this might have been the highlight of his career. You never know.
Or he might have...
If anyone knows who that is, let us know.
But it's not even on IMDb?
Nope. IMDb has very few uncredited actors in this movie, if at all. It has one. They have a British officer, Charlie, was played by Arthur Atkinson. That's the only uncredited role mentioned here, which basically means that nobody really cared enough to try to find out who these bit parts are in this movie. The waiter then hands over the drinks to the officers. The officers are having their nice conversation. They thank him for their drinks, which interestingly enough, all three drinks are not filled up to the same level. The middle one is a lot shorter, which you'd think that someone... I know if I was in a restaurant and I was with two other people and one of us got a lot less, we would probably say something to the waiter, at least at this point. And then he gives him a bottle of water with it.
Right.
Or that's what it seems
like. Yeah, because you might use it to dilute the... Or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, apparently. And then he walks over to the table where Sedgwick is sitting and walks around to the side. He could have stood across from him, or he could have stood on the closer side to him, which is the left-hand side. He actually walks around to go to the right-hand side. I wonder if that's just being done for our benefit, to be able to see
the
shot more clearly between the two of them. And he informs Sedgwick that he has a phone call. And I love the fact that Sedgwick just begins explaining, starts arguing with him about it. You know, he's like, for me? Well, what do I need a phone call? Who knows I'm here?
I told the wife never to call me office. I don't understand.
Yeah, he's a little baffled at this whole thing. And the waiter has to actually grab his arm and basically pull him out of the way to get up and go answer this phone. Now, you said you wanted to say something about the table that you noticed?
Well, I could be very wrong, but it looks they've changed the way the plates and everything are on the table a little.
Meaning they spent...
It looks like they've moved.
They spent too much time sitting around and he moved them?
Sometimes that happens. and no one really notices. But I could be wrong. It could just be the angle.
First of all, you are correct. What has been moved is the pot.
The cake. Oh, the pot? I wasn't sure if it was the cake or the pot.
Actually, all three are moved.
Yeah. Somewhere along the way, they probably had something where Coburn fiddled with the props and changed, but they just didn't think anybody would notice, which I never noticed myself until maybe now. So,
well, that's right. Part of the reasons why we look at movies this way.
Yeah.
1 minute at a time, where you get to look at all these details and you can find these continuity errors, even if it's not in the same minute, because you're pointing out something that we discussed yesterday, which is great. That's the whole point. I'm glad that you've gotten on board and, you know how this works, Howard. It's great. Not only are you a teacher, but you can also be a student. All right, very good. I got to tell you, I didn't even notice it. I didn't pay any attention to it, so you got me on that one. So,
well, I appreciate that. I can't see the cake, and I went, why can't I see the cake? You know, it was very clear before, and now it's hidden. So, yeah, that's what threw me on.
Correct. And you could also see a person standing at the bottom of the bridge, like right next to the water. Did you see that?
Yes.
Which I also didn't notice before. Yeah. It's just very strange that someone's standing there, because it seems that they're with their back to us. You know, if it was like a little kid standing there throwing rocks into the river or whatever it is, you know, make more sense. But it's just someone just standing there. Absolutely no clue.
It's a ghost. Somehow a ghost got on the set.
I see dead people. Exactly. At this point, Sedgwick is, you know, stands up and is pulled towards the counter by the waiter and convinces him that he needs to answer the phone. He looks down at the phone and picks it up. And as he picks it up, it's just great because the two waiters, or the waiter and the server or whatever, and the bartender, the two of them just, you know, very comically duck down behind the counter.
I love this part. I just love this part.
it's something that you would see in a, you know, maybe in a Saturday Night Live skit or something like that, you know, where they're just standing there and they just duck down. You know, like, I think one of them grabs the other's hand and then they duck down together. Yes. The waiter grabs the hand of, or taps the hand of the bartender, and then the two of them crouch down in order to avoid whatever's about to happen, whatever that could be.
Could you remind me, what year is this supposed to be?
This is supposed to be 1944.
Because I'm wondering, the resistance is really out front here. And do you know what time of year?
Yes, this is supposed to be August.
So D-Day's occurred.
D-Day has occurred,
June 6th. So the resistance is becoming more bold. because the British and Americans have landed on the French coast and are slowly making their way. I can't remember when they liberate Paris, but...
They're not there yet. I don't think they're there yet. But no, I mean, the real escape took place in March. It actually happened on March 24th, which, ironically, was Steve McQueen's 14th birthday.
Ah.
So I always like that little tidbit that, you know, the real escape. And one of the problems they had with the real escape was the fact that there was snow on the ground in March.
Yeah.
And it's a little difficult to hide your footprints when you're trying to escape in the snow.
Right.
Which was a contributing factor to many of the POWs getting picked up along the way. I guess they decided to change it to the summer, just to make it that they could have nicer shots, I guess.
You know, and more consistent shots. And more consistent weather. They don't have to worry about it suddenly snowing or anything. If anything, they'd have to worry about it raining. But other than that, they have nice, consistent shots.
Right. At this point, we basically get Sedgwick, you know, talking on the phone, looking down very strangely at the fact that these two waiters just crouched down behind the counter. And then we get another shot of the bridge where we see a car coming across the bridge. Now, I only notice this right now because you've brought it up. But if you look at the table, once again, the cup and pot have changed places.
Yeah.
They've moved again. and we know that Cedric wasn't there. I guess one of the German officers got up and moved it a little bit. He wanted to check the paper, So he went and changed it. That's great. So we see a car coming across the bridge, and then Sedgwick is still trying to figure out what's going on this phone. He's looking around, and then he just hangs up the phone, walks over to the counter, and ducks down. It always makes me wonder what he's told on that phone.
I don't think he was told anything. Because... What I love about it is he kind of figures it out. It finally dawns on him that he was called to this phone for no reason, and that, oh, I get it. I better do what these two guys are doing. And I love that moment. Oh, okay.
But he spends too much time on a phone with a dead end. That's the thing that bothers
me.
No,
he does milk it. I agree. He does milk
it. Yeah. Like, if someone's on the other end trying to convince him of something or saying something, or he should understand what someone's saying or whatever it is, you know, you'd also have different facial expressions or something. But he doesn't have any of that. All he has is that, you know, he sees the waiters crouched down as he's holding on this phone for
yeah,
it, too long.
They do milk it. I'm not going to argue that. They do milk it.
Yeah. And then we see the car once again coming over the bridge. We see the three officers taking their drinks. Now, what you can notice here is that you were correct. They must have diluted it because they each have much more in their glasses than they did earlier. Well,
yeah.
But if you look at the bottle of water, it doesn't look like it has that much missing.
Yeah.
Who knows? And then we have the car come around. It comes and stops pretty much in the same place where the German staff car stopped earlier when it was letting them out. And two out of three of the officers take a look at what's going on, and they're trying to figure out. One of them stands up, and then we see a machine gun in the back of, you know, someone in the back seat with a machine gun, and just opens up fire, and all three of these officers get hit. And I love the way that it looks, because these three stuntmen each did something completely different when they're getting shot. You know, you have one of them that and they all fall in different directions. One falls to the right, one falls to behind, one falls to the left. You know, one of them falls face down, the guy on the right. The guy in the middle falls over backwards. You know, like he jumps backwards as he's falling. And the third guy is the best, because he turns around as if he's trying to run and then gets hit from behind and ends up doing a, I don't know if it's a somersault, but he sprawls across the table that we were previously, oh no, it's not, it's the table next to where Sedgwick was sitting. But they really...
Yeah, they earned their money.
Yeah, they. There's no question about the fact that they cause a lot of damage to these chairs and tables. They over-dramatize it a little bit, but it's still fun to watch. The way that...
It's also interesting that the oldest one just falls. The younger ones really do a lot. So,
exactly.
Like I said, you can just fall. Just fall over. That's fine.
Yeah, again, the guy in the middle, he falls so far on his back that his feet are up in the air
at one point
before he does like a somersault.
Yeah.
I guess the director said to them, all right, just do whatever you feel like doing, you know, just pretend you're getting shot and make it as dramatic as possible.
No, actually, I think this was very, very carefully worked out. They're falling among tables and chairs. They're going to have to reshoot the scene again maybe. This was carefully rehearsed. This sort of thing that's very, very carefully rehearsed.
Maybe rehearsed by the three actors, but
right.
Or the three.
Yeah. No, the second unit director would come over and say, "Let's figure out what we're going to do."
Ah, okay. Then the car begins to speed off, and we see the shooter in the back seat tucks the gun in, and then the car disappears. And at this point, we have the original waiter pick his head up and take a look. He's like still crouching over a little bit as he's checking out to see if the coast is clear, if everything if he's done his job properly. This is such a fun scene. There's no question
about it.
Because again, this movie has very little on screen deaths.
Right.
You said that you watched this movie recently again, or you just watched these?
No,
scenes?
I watched 20 minutes or 30 minutes of it.
Right.
This section.
No, because I was going to quiz you on how many on-screen deaths we get to see up until this point.
But... Up until this point? Gosh, up until this point. Because we haven't reached the scenes in the city with Richard Attenborough,
correct.
Right? Yeah. No, so there wouldn't be very many. There'd be three well,
the
here.
Scenes with Richard Attenborough, there's no deaths there anyway.
Oh, that's right. No, there's one. David McCallum.
No, that happened already. That was in the train.
Oh, that happened already. Right.
No, we have David McCallum, and you have the German Kuhn. He gets shot by David McCallum.
Yeah, so there'd probably be less than 10.
Yeah.
Less than 10, 7 or 8.
Correct. We have Ives, then we had Kuhn, then we had Ashley Pick, then we had Blythe at the beginning of this week, and then these three. So we basically are, was it 7, 8?
Yeah, I think you said it with that.
Seven. Yeah, there you go, 7. Yeah, I mean, it's effective. What I think this movie is can show, even for screenwriters and you know filmmakers these days, that you don't need to have so much gratuitous violence in movies, and you can still be quite effective by downplaying it, but still, you know, still having some in it.
Well, that's sort of a different subject to talk about. That's going down a different philosophical and aesthetic road, talking about the place of not only violence, but sex in movies. And people saying, well, you didn't have all this sex and violence in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. You don't need it. And I'm going, well, you don't really need anything in a movie. Things are in a movie because of the choices of the filmmaker. And the 30s and 40s and 50s do not have this sex and violence
because they didn't want to, because they weren't allowed to.
Right. Right. Yeah. So
no, I wasn't trying to advocate that there should be less violence in movies or whatever. My point is that you can still be effective by having less violence in certain situations.
And
that's all I'm trying to say here.
But to add to that, the screenwriter has very little say on how violent the violence is.
Correct. Right?
So
okay, yeah. That's true. No, it depends on how it's played out beforehand. Obviously, you know, you have the studio and you have the director, and you know, once the movie's being made, they're going to make changes along the way.
Right.
You know, I was recently watching a few of the Friday the 13th movies, and I was reading about it afterwards that, you know, there were directors that didn't want to have so much sex and violence in it, and they were told that's what people want to see. That's what
if you're going to make money off the movie. Yes, and by today's standards, you look at the original Friday the 13th, and it's a little violent for its time. There's not a lot of sex for its time. You get more in Halloween. Halloween has a lot more sex and a lot more violence in many ways. I mean, times change.
Then we get the Donald Pleasance connection.
But times change, trends change. I do sometimes get tired of a lot of violence in films. It gets a little boring to me, but then you get someone like Quentin Tarantino, who is just brilliant at filming violence that, you know. Michael Bay tends to bore me. Quentin Tarantino is just incredible.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. I mean, as I'm sure you know, this movie is one of Tarantino's favorite movies.
Well, he uses it in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah.
And that's why he uses it, because he loves this movie so much. You know, unfortunately, I couldn't get him to come on the show and talk. He didn't respond to my emails. I don't live that far from him. I work relatively close to where he lives.
I did not know that.
He lives in Tel Aviv. Yes. He married Donna Pick and lives in Tel Aviv. I've heard of people that have seen him. You know, they've seen him in movie theaters before COVID. I don't know nowadays whether he comes out of his, whether he walks around in public more here or not.
I never really thought about it, but is he Jewish, or did he convert to Judaism, or is he just living there because his wife?
I believe that he's just living there because his wife. Mm-hmm. First of all, he's not Jewish, okay. And I do not believe that he converted, based on what I know. I don't know. I'll have to check into that.
It can be very painful to convert, so.
That all depends on whether his whether when he was a child.
That's right.
But we're not going to get into that.
Yes.
No need for us to get into gratuitous discussions.
Yes. Especially gratuitous discussion.
Exactly. Completely.
It's a very exciting film. It's It really gets you going, and yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss in general about the movie that, you know, not in this scene, in any scene that around the movie?
No, I don't. Well, nothing comes to mind on okay. that. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyone can go and listen to our conversation from, you know, on your podcast last year.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You know, so if they want to, if they want to hear more, let's talk more about things here. I actually should probably go revisit it also just to listen to what, you know, what type of crap I spewed back then.
That's what I always think. You know, did I really...
Wait, you think that about me? Huh? Or you think that about
myself.
Yourself? I said, you think that about me or about yourself?
No, myself. I go, you know, so I often don't go revisit them. I don't revisit them for those reasons. Just okay. let sleeping dogs lie.
Okay. Makes sense. Do you want to, for one final time, tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Well, again, Howard Kastner, Casner. So you can find me on Facebook and my Howard Kastner script consultation page on Facebook. My blog is called Rantings and Ravings of a Screenplay Reader. It's just called Rants and Ravings. And you can find Pop Art on a lot of streaming channels, but especially Apple, Podomatic, and Anchor. And I guess if this is my last one, I'll do another push for the books I've published. I have two books of short stories on Amazon, The Starving Artist and Other Stories, and The Five of Corporations and One True Religion. These are sci-fi, horror, fantasy short stories. And then the second edition of my screenwriting book, More Rantings and Ravings of a Screenplay Reader.
All right. Excellent. And you can get in contact with us by going to our Facebook group, The Cooler. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. Howard, I want to once again thank you for joining us on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It's the first time I've ever done this. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So anyone looking for a screenwriter on your shows, you can get in touch with Howard. I'm sure he'll be more than interested in coming and talking with you about your movies, whether they're minute by minute or not.
That's for sure.
All right. Well, have a great weekend, everybody. And until Monday, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.